From Harrisburg to Beaver Falls, Gettysburg to Johnstown, this is Lincoln Radio Journal. On this edition, Pennsylvania's activist state Supreme Court has ruled Governor Tom Wolf can force home health care workers into a labor union. Charles Mitchell of the Commonwealth Foundation is here to explain how the fight for worker freedom will continue. Revenue from the impact fee on natural gas drillers in Pennsylvania is on the upswing. Frank Gamrat and Eric Montardi have details on this week's Allegheny Institute report. And what is the impact of new tariffs on Pennsylvania's economy? Beth Ann Mumford of Americans for Prosperity Pennsylvania talks about it on this week's Lincoln Radio Journal Commentary. I'm Loman Henry, and welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. We'll get to Charles Mitchell from the Commonwealth Foundation in just a couple of minutes, but first, news headlines from patownhall.com. Among the offices Pennsylvania voters will find on the November ballot this year are seats in the Pennsylvania General Assembly. All state House seats and half of the seats in the state Senate are up for election. In Beaver County, James Craig, who is seeking to unseat State Senator Carmen Bartolotta, is now being investigated by the Beaver and Dauphin County District Attorneys for allegedly submitting nomination petitions containing forged signatures. Such petitions are required for a candidate to get his or her name on the primary election ballot. Given that the deadline to challenge petition signatures was last March, it is unclear what, if any, action can be taken against Craig should the investigation conclude the signatures were forged. Bartolotta has made the investigation a campaign issue. Craig has termed it a publicity stunt. Campaign cash is beginning to flow into Pennsylvania. American First Action, a pro-Trump super PAC, is investing over $700,000 in the campaign of Congressman Keith Rothfuss, who is fighting another incumbent, Connor Lamb, for the 17th district seat in suburban Pittsburgh. Meanwhile, Governor Tom Wolf got an even bigger cash boost, this from the left-wing group Planned Parenthood, which will pour over $2.5 million into the pro-abortion governor's campaign. Things are looking up for congressional challenger John Chrin. Chrin is hoping to unseat incumbent Democratic Congressman Matt Cartwright in what is likely the only GOP pickup opportunity in Pennsylvania. Cartwright's district was changed significantly when the state Supreme Court re-gerrymandered the districts earlier this year. Donald Trump rolled up big margins in a substantial part of what is now the 8th congressional district in northeastern Pennsylvania. Noted political scientist Larry Sabato, who authors a crystal ball report rating congressional races, this past week moved the district from likely Democrat to lean Democrat. That means Cartwright is still favored to retain his seat, but Chrin is gaining ground. All of this will be sorted out when voters go to the polls on Tuesday, November 6th. Read about all things Pennsylvania on the all-new patownhall.com. Labor unions contributed heavily to Governor Tom Wolf's election campaign, and he has rewarded them by issuing an order unionizing home health care workers. Now the state Supreme Court, stacked with justices who also received massive labor union financial contributions, has sided with him. Here to explain the issue, its ramifications, and possible ways to undo the executive order is Charles Mitchell. Charles is president and chief executive officer of the Commonwealth Foundation. Charles, welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. Charles, we have done a number of programs where we've talked about efforts by the Wolf administration to bring home health care workers, in particular family members who may be caring for family members, under union membership. And the Supreme Court has issued a final ruling on that. However, before we get to that point, tell us what it is that is at issue here.
Well, I mean, what's at issue here is one of the most disgusting and dishonest abuses I've seen in all my years working in public policy. And here's what it boils down to. Two things. Why is it dishonest? Because Governor Wolf and the Supreme Court are refusing to admit what's really going on here. I sat in the Supreme Court chamber while this was argued. They won't admit that this is all about unionization. But it is. If you read the ruling, if you read Governor Wolf's executive order from 3 years ago, what this is all about is a political organization, union, coming in between people in what is one of the most intimate relationships you can imagine in life. And that's why this thing is so disgusting. The two gentlemen who filed the court case that you've talked about so many times on the show are a perfect example of this. Dave Smith and Don Lambrecht, who live in Phoenixville, Chester County. Dave has been confined to a wheelchair for decades and because of a disease that he suffers from. And he was taken advantage of about 25 years ago by a caregiver. And he chose then to hire someone he trusted very much, Don, to take care of him. Dave has to be turned in the middle of the night or else he will develop bed sores. He can only move his index finger. He has to be fed. Don has to feed Dave smoothies so that he can have nutrition. I mean, you think of the intimacy and sensitivity of this relationship. Don has developed a working arrangement with Dave that works for Dave, that meets Dave's goals for Dave's care and Dave's life. And the idea that you would insert, frankly, any third party, let alone a political organization whose self-evident goal is to take 2% of Don's money and put it into political activity, which is what public sector unions do, it's absolutely appalling. And that's what the Fairness Center, the law firm, has been fighting with the Wolf administration about for 3 years now on behalf of Dave and Don. It's just horrendous that the Supreme Court has done what they've done, and that Governor Wolf continues to perpetuate this injustice, which started from him with an executive order.
What is the scope of this issue, Charles, when we look at this sort of arrangement? I'm sure that across the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, as large a state as we are, there have to be thousands, if not tens of thousands, of such relationships where you have a close friend or associate or a family member caring for another family member. If you have, say, for example, an aunt caring for a niece or a nephew, how is it that there would be any rationale for a union to be involved in that sort of a relationship?
Well, Loman, you're exactly right. There are about 20,000 people like Dave Smith across Pennsylvania who are involved in these type of caregiver relationships. And generally, you're right, it is a family member or a close friend, as is the case with Don. And so that's the scope of the people who are affected. And this is a national problem. We've seen it in many states across the country. Illinois, there was famously a United States Supreme Court case about this years ago. Washington State and many others. This is let's just be honest. This is a cookie-cutter left playbook thing that's been happening across the country when a governor comes into office who's willing to enable it. And that's precisely what happened here. And you asked, what reason would there be for a union to come into this relationship? Unfortunately, Loman, I can give you 700,000 reasons, because that's how much the unions who stand to benefit from this scheme gave to Governor Wolf when he ran for office in 2014. The way that the injustice happens is pretty simple. If you think about a situation like Dave and Don, Dave requires 24-hour care. Don can't do anything else. He can't work somewhere else, and that's the way it is for most, if not all, of these 20,000 of our fellow Pennsylvanians. This is what we created a safety net for, right? It's very appropriate, in my opinion, that we would be basically creating a government benefit to pay people to take care of these individuals in their homes, which is often better than an institution or something like that, and to pay them because they can't work somewhere else. And what the union does is it comes in and takes a chunk of that money automatically. People don't have to write a check. It just comes out of their compensation and goes to the union. And part of why it's so inappropriate, as I think you can readily understand, is these people are not government employees in the first place. They're employees of the people for whom they care. But because there's a government program involved, because there's a welfare payment involved, these unions, which have a parasitic relationship with politicians, stick their fingers in there and come between these people and their caregivers.
We are talking with Charles Mitchell, who is the president and chief executive officer of the Commonwealth Foundation. We'll talk a bit more about the Commonwealth Foundation in a few minutes. But Charles, we have this effort by the Wolf administration to bring unions into this very personal relationship. It's been litigated through the courts, finally hit the Supreme Court of Pennsylvania. You mentioned you were there for the hearing. What was the outcome?
The outcome was the following. The Supreme Court ruled that Governor Wolf's executive order that created this whole thing was constitutional. The claim, you know, legally speaking, the claim that Dave and Don made through their attorneys was that Governor Wolf did not have the power to unionize these 20,000 people. It's properly the role of the legislature. It was essentially a separation of powers issue. The legislature now is the ones who should take action. They can and they should, and this is part of Commonwealth Foundation's job, and we're working with them. They should pass legislation immediately to end this effort to come between the disabled and those who are caring for them.
Of course, this Supreme Court, very much an activist Supreme Court, and we will point out dominated by justices who were heavily also funded by labor unions. So as you can see, the playing field with both the executive and the judicial branch very heavily slanted against individual freedom and toward the labor unions, especially those that are politically active, which I think, Charles, is pretty much all of them. So this legislation, what exactly are you asking the legislature to do? Is there still a chance that this could get done now, or is this something that's more likely going to be after the first of the year?
That, of course, depends on our legislators and the degree to which they want to be politicians as opposed to statesmen, which is up to them. This is not a complicated operation. First of all, it's not a complicated issue. You are exactly right. This is an activist Supreme Court that has clear political goals. And by the way, I saw that in the courtroom. It was funny. The lawyers for the governor were saying, this isn't about a union, you know. Okay, well, then explain to me why all the people who run Pennsylvania's biggest public sector unions were sitting in the front row of the courtroom in the Capitol. And also explain to me why one of the justices who voted in the majority came out before the hearing started and was hugging all of them. It was not hard to see. But what's also not hard to see is how to fix it. The legislature can pass a very simple bill, simply say that the executive order is invalid.
What's plan B? Is there another route to undoing this and restoring the confidentiality, restoring the nature of the relationship between these caregivers and their patients?
This issue has already gone to the United States Supreme Court. So even if Governor Wolf's corrupt action stands, and it doesn't need to, and I don't think it will, by the way, but even if it does, the Supreme Court has already ruled that these individuals have right to work, the caregivers. So they, even if this union is created and, you know, all this bad stuff happens, they can still get out. They cannot be forced to pay money to a union in order to keep their jobs. So that's one way that this situation can be solved, was quite frankly by these people exercising their First Amendment rights and vindicating their freedom. The Supreme Court ruling on this was a few years ago. It's called Harris versus Quinn. It's settled law. It's very, very, very clear. Also, in addition to what the legislature might do, I would be less than surprised if we didn't see further litigation on this. I think it's easy to see where there will continue to be issues created by what the governor's doing and by what the unions are doing. Violations of people's First Amendment rights, all that kind of thing.
Also, somewhat related to this, it being a worker freedom issue, and on a much happier note, the Supreme Court of the United States did a couple of months ago now, in the Janus decision, they held that government employees cannot be required to be members of labor unions or pay the so-called fair share fees. What is happening in Pennsylvania to make public sector union members aware of their rights under Janus?
There was a hearing in the House of Representatives a couple of days ago on what needs to be done in order to help our fellow Pennsylvanians vindicate their First Amendment rights under the Janus decision that you just referenced. And there's one particular piece of legislation that was heard at that hearing that I think is very, very promising. It's a bill sponsored by Representative Kate Klunk from Hanover down in York County. And what it would require is House Bill 2571. It's very simple. What it says is unions should inform people of their First Amendment rights and how to exercise those rights. Under the previous Supreme Court, you know, jurisprudence, there was another case before Janus that laid out what people's rights were, and there was a notification that had to be sent out every month to people as to what their rights are. It's common sense. It should be done. I think there's a definitely a solid chance of seeing that legislation move. It's great legislation. It's great leadership by Representative Klunk to have it out there already, and I'm very hopeful that that's something the General Assembly will act on very soon.
Well, we know the Commonwealth Foundation is on top of all of these issues, and we will continue to keep the public aware of them as we go along. Before we end, Charles, tell us a little bit about the Commonwealth Foundation, where folks can go to read more about all these issues.
Where people should go is commonwealthfoundation.org, And Commonwealth Foundation, we're pretty simple. We're your watchdogs in Harrisburg, and what we're all about is transforming free market ideas into public policies so all Pennsylvanians can flourish.
Charles Mitchell, the president and CEO of the Commonwealth Foundation. Charles, thank you for taking time to be with us.
Thank you, Loman.
Pennsylvania imposes an impact fee on natural gas drillers, and with the improving economy, revenue from the fee is on the increase. Here to discuss are Frank Gamrat and Eric Montardi from the Allegheny Institute for Public Policy. Eric?
Hello, and welcome to the Allegheny Institute Report on the Lincoln Institute Radio Journal. I'm Eric Montardi. Joining me today is my colleague, Frank Gamrat. Frank, how are you doing today?
Good, Eric. How are you?
I'm doing okay. Thank you very much, Frank.
Drying out. Huh?
Yeah, we're drying out here in western Pennsylvania as we speak. Hopefully, we're not going to get any additional rainfall. It's been a bit much this year, but... Mm-hmm. Central Pennsylvania is in the same boat, yes. So to speak, no pun intended.
Yeah, literally.
But hopefully, that is about it. Frank, you recently wrote a brief on the impact fee. You've been tracking this fee over many years since mm-hmm. it's been created in 2012. There's new numbers that came out. Can you give our listeners an idea of first what the impact fee is?
Absolutely.
And then what were the collections for this year?
Great. An impact fee is one of those things that has a bit of a misnomer. What it is every time a drilling company cracks the ground on Pennsylvania soil to access either the Utica or Marcellus Shale, they are subject to the impact fee. And the impact fee charges them a flat rate, regardless of the amount of gas that they happen to produce. So it's a schedule, and we have the schedule on our website, AlleghenyInstitute.org, if anyone's really interested. But it could be anywhere from $50,000 per well down to, and of course, again, the schedule as the well ages, it goes down a little bit to reflect the aging status, and there's a little less gas coming out of the pool. And so it sounds fairly trivial, but it brings in a lot of money for the Commonwealth. I mean, you said in 2012 was Act 13, I put it together, was retroactive to the 2011 activity, and from 2011 to 2017, the state's collected $1.43 billion. So the impact fee sounds like nothing, but it really has added up for the Commonwealth over the years. But unlike a severance tax, which in political circles comes up every now and again, the impact fee was designed to place the money where it is most needed, and that is those communities and counties most impacted by this activity. So it's a lot different than the severance tax.
How were the collections of the impact fee this year, mm-hmm. and how did that compare to previous year of collections?
Right. This year, we're in 2018, but the fee tracks the activity of 2017. In 2017, they collected $209.6 million. Now, what makes that interesting is in 2016's collections, they only collected $173.26. So there was a substantial 21% gain in the impact fee over the 2 years. That is significant on a couple of things, is that it's turned around a bit of a slide. The peak was 2013 when they brought in $225.7 million, and so it had been sliding ever since, and of course it has rebounded a bit in 17. Now, a lot of this has to do with, again, I mentioned that schedule of the fee. It is not just based on cracking the ground. It's also based on the average selling price of natural gas on the New York Mercantile Exchange. I believe it's per millions of BTUs. And so the higher that price is on the Mercantile Exchange, the higher will be the impact fee, the lower the fee. And of course, after this all got rolling in 2011, 2012, there was an oversupply of natural gas, which depressed the price. When it depressed the price, it of course depressed the impact fee schedule and charges, and that's why some of that money had started the decline as the years went on.
Frank, I know in previous times you've talked about the impact fee. You've given the listeners just a basic background on mm-hmm. how this money's divvied up, because right. it goes to a lot of different places.
Yep.
Can you just give our listeners again a quick mm-hmm. summary on how that money is divvied up?
Oh, absolutely. This money is spent really in three basic areas. One, of course, is it's distributed to state agencies. They get the first $10.5 million right off the top. The Pennsylvania Utility Commission for administering everything, Department of Environmental Protection, Fish and Boat Commission, Emergency Management Agency, Office of State Fire Commissioner, and Department of Transportation. They get that off the top for their troubles in keeping track of the industry. Another 7.75% is given to a state conservation committee for county conservation districts. And again, you're talking about the remainder of that going into Marcellus Shale Legacy Fund, of which from there, municipalities get a slice, as do counties get a slice, regardless of whether these counties have any activity or not. So it's distributed fairly broadly across the Commonwealth. This is not something that is only affecting Western or North Eastern Pennsylvania and ignoring Philadelphia. In fact, Philadelphia gets a substantial amount of money from an impact fee. Since it began, they've collected over $9 million. They get about $1.5 million or so every year from the impact fee, and it's based on the population, as the county's population as a percentage of the state population. So everyone's guaranteed something. Now, even in smaller counties where their population isn't too much, like a Montour County, they're guaranteed $25,000 every year from this Greenaways Fund that the impact fee helps to subsidize.
That's interesting. So the money, a bit of it goes to the state, like you said, and those are the functions that are carrying out something related to the drilling activity. Then it goes to the local governments where there's drilling activity and where there's not. There's something that's spread around each place. Frank, at the beginning of the interview, you had mentioned the differences between the impact fee and the severance tax. And this year, you know, we're already into the fiscal year for 2018. There's no severance tax in the budget. It's been mentioned before. It comes back. It goes away. It comes back. It goes away. What do you again see in the future here after, you know, this fiscal year and then the budgets going forward?
Okay. Governor Wolf made a severance tax a central part of his campaign originally back in 2014, I suppose. And so he has had one inserted into his budget every year since. And the severance tax would be a little more general. And look, people come out and say, well, we're the only state without a severance tax. Well, the converse of that is we're the only state with an impact fee. You know, when they say we're the only state with a severance tax, it gives the misleading impression that the drillers in this state aren't paying anything. Not only are they paying the impact fee, they're also paying corporate net income tax, they're paying royalties, and these are substantial sums of money. Well, the severance tax would go to Harrisburg directly, and then, of course, they would then be the ones who distribute the money out to their pet projects and their friends. Again, the impact fee goes back to the communities that were most impacted by the drilling activity. Now, that being said, in the governor's last couple of attempts, he said, well, the severance tax and the impact fee will remain in place so that everyone who's getting money still gets the money. And of course, now you're talking double taxation. I'm sure there'd be a whole bunch of legal issues involved there as well. Now, this being a gubernatorial election year, 2018, the severance tax was conspicuously absent from his budget. But I'm guessing that if he were to prevail in November, I'm sure in February of 2019, we'll be talking about a severance tax yet again, because it's just something that he feels strongly about, but it would not be as lucrative for parts of the state as otherwise would be.
Great stuff as always, Frank, and we like to tell our listeners if they want to read this brief and any of your previous work on the topic, to always visit our website, which is www.alleghenyinstitute.org. For Frank Gamrat, this is Eric Montardi. This has been the Allegheny Institute Report on the Lincoln Institute Radio Journal.
President Trump has imposed additional tariffs on a wide range of goods. So what is the impact? Beth Ann Mumford of Americans for Prosperity Pennsylvania has this Lincoln Radio Journal commentary.
As Pennsylvanians head into the fall, the economy is on the uptick. Unemployment is at an all-time low nationally. Wages are up, and small businesses specifically are expressing optimism not seen in decades. Pennsylvanians are benefiting from recent policies that break down barriers to opportunity and give individuals, communities, and businesses the maximal chance to thrive. The Tax Cuts and Jobs Act was an important step toward unrigging the economy and giving everyday Americans a pay raise, boosting the economy and helping entrepreneurs create new jobs. Even more than that, extra money in the pocket of individuals means more opportunity to do the things with that money they earn than handing it over to Washington, D.C. to be wasted. Too often, government creates barriers that make it harder for those who start with little to find a promising path forward, and for those already successful to unlock even more jobs and more innovation to improve lives. Over the last 2 years, Congress made rolling back burdensome and unnecessary regulations a priority. This has freed many small businesses to instead focus on how to grow in their communities and drive the kind of local economic activity that supports civic charity and creates local jobs. We've seen numerous changes on the state level that have improved prosperity as well. But to maximize prosperity, we can make even further improvements to give every Pennsylvania business more opportunity to grow. For example, we should pursue trade policies that open markets and provide more access to abundant materials and goods. Countries with the freest trade have tended to be the most prosperous. Conversely, the restriction of trade, for example, through tariffs, can hurt the economy. Tariffs, whether levied on steel, aluminum, pork, or other materials, reduce competition and limit our access to products. Pennsylvania's top two trade partners are Canada and Mexico, and retaliatory tariffs could hurt Pennsylvania's economy. Trade increased the previous year between Pennsylvania and these two partners, but tariffs could reverse these economic gains. Some might ask why we should reject tariffs if other countries won't play by the same rules. But tariffs would increase prices on consumers, and there are better ways to address bad actors than by punishing everyday Americans. Pennsylvanians are worried. Chocolate producers, farmers, construction equipment manufacturers like Volvo Construction Equipment and Harley-Davidson worry these measures will raise prices and pinch their bottom lines. Pennsylvania Senator Pat Toomey agrees, saying tariffs are taxes on American consumers and pointing out that imposing them weakens our economy. Trade policies that open markets and provide more access to abundant materials and goods benefit Pennsylvanians are the measure of success. And while pushing other countries to lower their tariffs or eliminate them altogether is the right goal, we need to be careful about trading the economic windfall we've seen under our growing economy for higher taxes on every American that tariffs are likely to bring. It's an exciting time for our economy. Let's keep working to ensure that American businesses and American consumers have every opportunity to win with free trade and open markets. I'm Beth Ann Mumford, State Director of Americans for Prosperity Pennsylvania. Join our effort to break down barriers and help every Pennsylvanian live their best life at www.americansforprosperity.com.
If you miss hearing Lincoln Radio Journal on your favorite radio station, audio of our complete program is available on our websites, lincolnradiojournal.com and lincolninstitute.org. For 23 years, Lincoln Radio Journal has been heard on public affairs-minded radio stations throughout the Commonwealth, including WFRJ-FM in Windber, WRYV-FM in State College, along with WROV-FM in the Ridgeway-Dubois area. The Lincoln Radio Journal is produced weekly by the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. The Lincoln Institute is completely funded through the generosity of individuals, corporations, and philanthropic foundations. They include the Allegheny Foundation of Pittsburgh, the Houston Foundation of Coatesville, the Worrell Foundation of Carlisle, and the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association, all of whom have helped to underwrite the costs of this program. Lincoln Radio Journal is a trademark of the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. Comments and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Lincoln Institute or of this radio station. From the Lincoln Broadcast Center in Harrisburg, I'm Loman Henry. Thank you for listening to Pennsylvania's most widely broadcast public affairs radio program, Lincoln Radio Journal. Plug into the pulse of Pennsylvania. Thank you.